Bob, thank you so much for joining us here. As a 42-year-old who works in this business, you were the guy I wanted to emulate, and I watched in every single capacity from all your sports work to your later show. So thank you so much for taking the time. I hope you are healthy and safe, and thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, George. Yes, luckily healthy and safe and well-situated and thankful to be fortunate enough to be able to say that. And thank you for the kind words by way of introduction.
Well, let me get started here with something we were just talking about before we even get into baseball. Bob, what do you make of the social changes you're seeing in this country right now, and particularly the role that sports is playing?
Yeah, it's a very broad topic, and to address it with any sort of nuance takes more time than we have here. But the end of your question, I think, is pertinent. For a very long time, we've heard the mantra, stick to sports, stick to sports. And what that has almost always meant, depending upon what direction it came from, was stick to sports unless you're saying something I want to hear and something I agree with. Well, now they can't keep the lid on that jar any longer. The voices are out there. That doesn't mean that every voice is equally valid or thoughtful or insightful, but the voices are out there. And sports, as it has been many times over the years historically, you have to be completely ignorant of history to think and assert that sports and social issues and political issues have never intersected, should never intersect, and never the twain shall meet, and it should always be just there's a ground ball to shortstop and nothing more. That's never been true, and it's certainly not true now. And it's interesting that these social issues have once again come to the fore during a period of time when there is virtually no live sports to speak of, a little bit of golf, tennis coming, whatever, but no team sports to speak of. Therefore, there's even more time that has to be filled in sports coverage, whatever you want to call it, and it's being filled with discussions about social issues. So the dynamics here have made it even more prominent than it has ever been before, and there's just no escaping it, so get used to it.
Bob, we've had a lot of discussions here about the NBA, specifically about the ability to both play and also support the causes and movement of social justice in this particular case. Kyrie Irving has been someone who has been very vocal about this. There's been some commentary as to how genuine he's been about his motivations. But what do you make of Kyrie Irving's position, which is basically you can't play because it takes away from the movement?
I don't think there's much logic to it. It's not as if there isn't a whole lot of airtime, a whole lot of digital space where any variety of subjects can be discussed. And once these players are back doing what they're best known for, then there's no reason to think that that takes their voice away. Keep in mind, Kyrie Irving is a wonderful player. I'm sure he's well-intended. He's also someone who asserted seriously, not tongue-in-cheek, that the earth is flat. So I think reasonable people can make distinctions between how much weight and how much time they invest in listening to the thoughts of this person as opposed to that.
And to your point, LeBron James has clearly shown us you can do both. He just recently started a voter initiative program for African Americans, and he's more than willing to play and utilize that platform. And Adam Silver has been such a player-friendly commissioner. But Bob, let's switch over to baseball here real quick. Clearly, the pendulum has swung in regards to public perception between the owners and players in Major League Baseball. How do you view the current state of these ongoing negotiations?
Obnoxious, myopic, insufferable, while much of the country suffers. If you want an example of can't see the forest for the trees, both from the standpoint of their place in society, but also in what's best for their business, I said this in a couple of places before. They are like the parties to a particularly bitter divorce, arguing over who gets the sofa and who gets the silverware, and meantime the house is on fire. Put the fire out. 2020 is just a one-off. It's not, no matter what these people with their tunnel vision think, it's not a predicate for what's going to happen in 2021 when they'll have to pound out another collective bargaining agreement. It's all a one-off. Do the players really think, no matter what the owners propose in terms of contracts, do they really think the owners want to play without fans indefinitely? or want to play with teams isolated in their own time zones indefinitely. Both parties should have seen that given the current atmosphere, a pandemic, an economic crisis, and now add to it social unrest that's going on, that it just would not play well at all in the court of public opinion to have their petty and parochial disputes take precedence over getting back on the field. If the coronavirus, which doesn't recognize any of these factors, if the coronavirus had derailed them once they started or forced them to start later than they would have hoped, the public would have understood that. Now, if they come back playing 60 games, 64 games, 50 games, whatever it is, the public will know the reason for that, at least at the outset, is because of their labor dispute, not anything that has to do with external circumstances like the coronavirus. And then on top of it, they could get derailed because it's such a difficult needle to thread. They could start, even under disputed circumstances, and have to stop again if the virus surges or enough players or people surrounding the game come down with COVID-19. So it was a mess to begin with. Football is going to face it. I don't know if they can play football in the fall. The NBA hopes it can complete its season. The NHL the same. None of those things are assured. But only baseball has made a public relations mess out of it.
Bob, how would you compare this to the 94 strike and the effects that it could have?
It's bad already. It could get worse because although everyone's hopeful, there's no guarantee that the virus is going to cooperate even in 2021. So that season could be interrupted or truncated. And then it's possible, since these parties never seem to be able to clearly see their mutual interest, it's possible that they could butt heads again and there could be some kind of lockout or strike in 2022. And then you'd have potentially three seasons blighted by not just interruption of play, but by continued resentment. Now, in 94 into 95, they lost the World Series of 94. That had never happened. Despite all the history of labor disputes, that had never happened before or since. And they lost the completion of a season in which Tony Gwynn was on the verge of perhaps hitting 400, and other teams had had success for the first time in a long time. The Cleveland Indians were beginning to assert themselves. The Montreal Expos had their best shot ever at getting to the World Series. Ken Griffey Jr. was on a possible 60-home run pace. There were a lot of interesting things happening at that point, and they lost that. So that's not comparable to what's happening to baseball in 2020 because they didn't have a season underway. But there's still the resentment that was always there. You know, the mantra is, and it's cliched, and maybe it's shallow, but people latch onto it, billionaires fighting with millionaires. That's always been there. But now it takes place in the middle of all the circumstances we talked about before, medical, economic, sociological. Now I would think people have even less patience with it. So in a way, it could be even worse.
Bob, how would you assess Rob Manfred's ability to be the commissioner of baseball at this particular moment?
Well, his strength when he was Bud Selig's top lieutenant, his strength was always negotiating. He is close to universally regarded as a very savvy negotiator. So far, that strength has not been able to carry the day. So I think I like Rob Manfred very much personally. I respect his intelligence and his intentions, but there have been some things over the last year. I don't know that people's reaction to his punishments regarding the Astros were completely fair. I think he was limited by circumstances, and so a lot of the grief that he caught I thought was disproportionate, but there is that in the minds of many, and now there's this. And no matter how you apportion the blame, the guy at the top always gets more of it. He's the commissioner of baseball. Baseball's in a bad way. If they can't salvage something out of this, not just in 2020, but all the things we talked about going forward in 21 and 22, then it's going to hurt his legacy. But the story is yet to be fully told, so we still got a chance to turn that ship around.
Bob, due to COVID-19 and everything that's transpiring, how confident are you that we'll even have sports?
Not fully confident. The NBA and the NHL have the best shot because they only have to complete in a condensed period of time and in one place, complete what they started. But even then, that's not assured, as you see that there's a little bit of wobbling regarding the NBA. Just this past couple of days, we find out that eight or nine Phillies, five players and others associated, and we're talking about the whole roster, not 25 or 26 people. They've got more people than that gathered at the moment or about to gather. Eight or nine have tested positive. So we know that even if a given sport does everything right, they're up against a set of medical circumstances that are unpredictable and perhaps uncontrollable. So I think that basketball and hockey have the best shot at it, although it's not guaranteed. But football and baseball have to play some semblance of a regular season before they get to the payoff of their postseason. And there's no guarantee they can ever get that far. It's a tightrope walk, and who knows if you get from one side of the ravine to the other.
Bob Costas with us here. Bob, I know there was talk about, at least initially with Major League Baseball, about creating a bubble environment, much like the NBA and MLS and NHL. But clearly that wasn't going to fly with the players. How would you have felt if they were going to play in that type of environment? Would you feel better?
Well, I think fans in general would accept almost anything as a one-off under these circumstances. When you start with not having fans, already you're into a unique situation. So altering the playoff format, playing the World Series at a neutral site, isolating in only a few places. But remember, those places initially were Florida and Arizona. Then they added Texas. Those are three states that are surging right now in terms of the coronavirus. I think that people would have accepted any of those circumstances as fans. But going back to what I said a moment ago, baseball and football have to get in a regular season, even if it's a shortened regular season. That's a whole lot different. Asking people to isolate that way is a whole lot different than asking NHL players or NBA players to isolate in a nice enough location, Orlando or Vegas, for a sport that plays indoors with no fans, not dependent upon weather in any way, and for a relatively short period of time. A lot of players are uncomfortable with even that. But to do it over a long period of time, I don't think the public would mind it because it's just a television product for the time being. But the players, and I think that would be a big problem.
Bob Costas, legendary broadcaster. Of course, you can check out his work at MLB Network. Bob, an absolute pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much for taking the time. Stay healthy, stay safe, and thanks again.
Thank you, George.
There he is, Bob Costas with us here. Bergman, how do you feel about Bob Costas' position on Major League Baseball?
I think he's right. It's very important that they get through this year and look through the forest through the trees, right? Where you have to look far ahead, because this year specifically is not like any other year that you're ever going to have. And yes, he's right. Fans like us are going to just be okay with it because we know what's going on. It's about next year and what's going to go on further than that.
Yeah, no, I agree. But now, isn't it kind of on the players? I know the players are upset, right? The owners have kind of turned the tables on the players a little bit, because the CDC and Dr. Fauci and everyone's saying, hey, you probably shouldn't play that far into October if you don't have to. You definitely don't want to be playing the playoffs in November for health reasons, not to mention, you know, playing in weather, right? Like, that becomes a potential huge hurdle there for Major League Baseball, too. So I think that it's kind of been flipped back on the players a little bit, right? Because according to the story I saw yesterday from Jesse Rogers of ESPN.com, that Rob Manfred basically told Tony Clark, dude, we're running out of time. We want to play 60 games. We can only play 60 games because there's only 66 available nights at the moment.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And when the players got the 60-game full prorated salary, once it hit that 6-0 number, the players should have just gone and said, all right, great. Let's do it. Let's go for it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like, let's go. Like, even if it's reluctantly, like, you're getting your full salary. I know you want more games, but you're running out of damn time.
Yes, you know? And because of it, you would have had you already had the entire public on your side. You had actually taken it away from the owners when the owners typically have that.
Right.
You had it. And all you had to do was say, yes, now you're the heroes. 60 games, the baseball's going to be played. You're getting your full salary. Awesome. Let's go for it. And you fought.
Yeah.
And now you look bad.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm with you. I agree. Like, I think, Laura, where are you on this? It feels like this is kind of, now they've put it back on and pinned it on the players again.
Yeah, I was. I just feel like there's so many repercussions that will happen if they don't play. Just not us being mad and saying, the hell with you. But just like he said, you know, it goes into other seasons. And now what, we might at all not have baseball, you know, for a few years. So that's crazy to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just nuts. I did love what he said about stick to sports and all those people that hate that are big stick to sports people. He basically told the stick to sports people to go shove it.
Yeah, which was fantastic, because social issues and sports have always intersected.
That's 100%. Yes. That notion that they don't is just silly. You're just being naive in that scenario. Does it happen every day? No, but it happens fairly regularly. So, Bergman, I'm getting grief. Like, people are agreeing with you. We had this list. You had this weird... It is shocking. You had this list of, like, the toughest sports to play. They had boxing. They had hockey where?
Two. So it was still up high, but it was
right.
Two.
But you said hockey is harder. I said no, because you have teammates in hockey. Now, granted, there is skating and ice. I get that. But boxing is just harder to me because you can't depend on anyone else. It's just you. Just like MMA to me would be harder than hockey. But people are weighing in on Twitter and saying, this is the best one I saw from JD the Kid. He writes, I hate Bergman. Never agree with him. Never agree with him. On most things. But yeah, I think hockey is harder. LOL at Sedano. I mean, listen, even the people that hate you are going on your side here.
That obviously means that I'm right, because then that's happening. But think about it this way. When you've been to hockey games, right?
I have.
Of course. So what is the most exciting thing about a hockey game?
I'll tell you on the other side what the most exciting thing about the hockey game is, because it's very similar to what's most exciting about a boxing match. I'll tell you that on the other side. Plus, we've got some sad news from the movie world, and I'm going to tell you why you need to just relax about the NBA. I'm just telling you, just take a breath. R-E-L-A-X. Relax. I'll explain in 2 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Check out Shower Sessions, part interview, part concert, all from the shower. Grammy winner St. Vincent invites up-and-coming artists to sing, get funky, all in the sound booth of their home, their shower. Watch on YouTube.com/progressive. Also, 710 Thank You Thursdays continue, presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. If you know someone who's working as a healthcare provider, a frontline worker, we want to celebrate them. We want to honor them. Email us at ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com with their first, last name, city, and occupation, or you can post a short video on Instagram or Twitter, and include the hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. Every Thursday, we'll interview one of these great frontline workers and award them a $500 thank you gift, which includes $200 of service to Valvoline Instant Oil Change and three $100 gift cards. One to Wingstop, one to VSLiquor.com, and one to Shooteria.com. Clint Yates is going to join us at 11:40. We will talk to him. I want to talk baseball with him. I want to talk NASCAR with him. Thanks to Ryan McGee, who joined us earlier. If you missed him, he was unbelievable talking about NASCAR. And NASCAR's in on trying to get this person, as they should, because my initial reaction, and I'm just curious how you guys felt, was surprise, like, God, man, come on, it's 2020, like, we're doing this. But also, yeah, it's Talladega, Alabama, and it's NASCAR. But they are dopes, because as Ryan alluded to us earlier, there's not a lot of people at these tracks right now. So barring some random person being someone who could do a jewel heist and getting into Talladega when no one else was there, chances are it's going to be someone that's going to be part of the NASCAR community in some way, shape, or form. And they'll get banned, and hopefully they'll get charged with a hate crime, because that's what this deserves right now, to be honest with you. So thanks to Ryan McGee for joining us there. If you missed that, subscribe to the podcast. Also, thanks to Bob Costas. If you missed Bob, I mean, Bob was giving us hot takes in those first three or four questions, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was going hard, especially after the sports and social issue people.
Yeah.
Stick to sports, guys.
Well, and he killed baseball, myopic, all those. He just destroyed them as a whole, like players and owners. So thanks to Bob for joining us. Again, if you missed Bob, subscribe to the podcast, the Sedano Show podcast. We always appreciate your patronage there. So appreciate it. Thanks. Thanks again. So real quick, today is the 36-year anniversary of what I think is one of the biggest upsets in movie history. Do you know what that is, Bergman?
How many years?
36 years ago.
36 years ago. No, I can't. I don't know.
Laura, do you know 36 years ago, the biggest upset in movie history?
No.
1983.
I wasn't born yet.
No, no, 84.
84. Oh, because I'm 36.
You don't know how to do math.
Well, yeah. No, I'm 36, and my birthday hasn't happened yet, so that's where that was going.
Yeah, 36, yeah.
You're Googling 84. It, huh?
No, no. Of course, I don't Google. That's
yeah, cheating. You are a little bit of a cheater that way, I feel
no,
like. Laura's
no,
on to
absolutely
you.
Not. Absolutely not. I refuse to cheat.
Did you cheat on Fast Track when you
never,
used to make
never.
When you allowed them to do Fast Track?
Never. I would not. It was against the rules, and that would
okay.
Why?
I'm
that,
just curious.
That takes away from it.
I'm just curious. All right, so 36-year anniversary of Daniel LaRusso beating Johnny Lawrence of the Cobra Kai Dojo with the crane
yeah.
kick at the under-18 All-Valley Karate Tournament up in Encino, baby.
What a great movie. Are you watching Cobra Kai?
I haven't, but I heard it's actually really good on YouTube.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I heard it's really good.
It is so yeah. good. I can't wait for a third season to come out, or fourth yeah. season.
I heard it. So is Macchio in it too?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Johnny Lawrence and Macchio are both in it.
Yeah.
They pay respect to Mr. Miyagi at times.
Yeah, because, well, right, he's no longer with us, Pat Morita. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But is that the biggest upset in sports movie history? Or
that
maybe forget about sports. I mean, we're thinking sports, but in movie history. Biggest upset in movie history.
That's a pretty big one. I mean, Rocky and Drago is a pretty big upset.
I mean, Rocky and Drago, but by the time the fourth one rolled around, we kind of knew that Rocky wasn't going to lose that many more times. You know what I'm saying? No.
He did lose.
He lost to Apollo. He lost to Mr. T. That's not a bad comparison. Laura, where is that on biggest upsets in movie history?
I actually agree with Greg. I was thinking of that one, the Rocky and Drago. Yeah.
How about Dodgeball, the biggest underdog story ever? I saw that movie this weekend. Actually.
No, that's a fantastic movie.
Yeah. How funny is it that Lance Armstrong is the guy that meets him in the airport and convinces
right.
him to play? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I forgot all about that.
Lance
part.
Armstrong. Be like, yeah, it's going to be, you know, when I recovered from cancer in three different places and, you know, went on to win 5 Tour de France's in a row, you know, and it's like, ooh, looking back, it's still funny, but it's still like, ooh, funnier for different reasons, obviously.
So, I mean, if you want to go by Oscars, the biggest one for me is when Saving Private Ryan had lost to Shakespeare in Love. Is
no,
that what
no,
lost?
No, we don't have to go that route. I mean, I was okay. I was talking about like sports
movies. That's an upset.
Movies, you
okay, well, but you just said no.
I mean, okay, but let's,
like,
you know, in retrospect, we should probably stick to sports in this case.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I was just going along with that. Either way, yeah, it has to be Drago. I think that's the biggest one. You have a better one?
I don't agree with Greg much, but
you have recently.
Don't tell me that. Okay, I agree with George. I don't know. I'm going just to go against you.
Just for funsies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, people are texting me Rudy's not that. That was
that's
one
not
play.
Upset. Yeah, it wasn't even real.
Not, yeah, and it's not real, right? Like, stop with your Rudy patronage. Like, enough with your Rudy stans. I don't understand. Like, there's all these people that are like stans for the movie Rudy. It's not even a good movie.
Puts you to sleep.
It does.
It does. It puts you to sleep.
Not a big fan. I'm not gonna lie. I liked it when it first came out because it was a sports movie, but meh.
No.
Nothing important there.
Bob Nightingale has a tweet. You ready for this?
Uh-oh.
MLB.
Oh,
everything
boy.
Appears to be coming to a head. MLB and the MLB Players Association are trying to see if they can reach a last-minute agreement on a 60-game season this afternoon, or Commissioner Rob Manfred will implement a 54-to-60-game season.
They
either way,
agree.
You're getting baseball, it sounds like.
Yeah, which is nice. But they should absolutely just go ahead and agree to that 60. Just stop right now. Just go for it.
Yeah. Just go. Right? Like, who cares? So I think still Daniel LaRusso, and I'm curious, we can open up to the phones, 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. Robert is in Redondo Beach. Robert.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hey, what about Vision Quest?
Ooh.
Do you remember the movie Vision Quest where he went up against this huge man?
Yeah, I guess that's a pretty good one. It was a wrestling movie, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
I watched Karate Kid, but Vision Quest just came to my head, and that was kind of like the same line.
Yeah. I guess that's not so bad. Matthew Modine, Vision Quest. Didn't really think about that one. There was a, speaking of terrible 80s movies, thank you for the call, Robert. I appreciate it. Stay healthy, stay safe. Speaking of terrible 80s movies, have you ever seen the the movie called American Anthem?
No. What is that?
So American Anthem, the movie, is a movie about gymnastics, okay?
And
it is, I'm trying to remember, Mitch Gaylord is in the movie. Janet Jones, who she's still married to Wayne Gretzky, right?
Yes, she is.
Yeah, so Wayne Gretzky's wife, and it is like, basically like Team USA. It's very 80s, because here's the move we did in the 80s, which is we just did everything against like the communist countries, right? Like, you know, like Rocky against Drago, right? American Anthem is that. It's like some gymnastics setting. The funniest gymnastic movie, though, I've ever seen, I believe, which also has Mitch Gaylord in it, is Gymkhana. Have you ever seen Gymkhana?
No, I haven't seen either of these
movies. Oh, you are not a child of the 80s, then. This is the thing. Yeah, so...
Well, I am.
Yeah.
But not with this.
Yeah, it's actually... It wasn't Mitch Gaylord. It was Kurt Thomas was the name of the gymnast. And he was basically like a gymnast slash like karate guy. And he was doing all sorts of stuff. He's fighting ninjas. It was awful. Like, in retrospect, even then, it was pretty terrible. But now, watching movies like that, you go back and you're like... Dude, what were we thinking in the 80s? This is awful to watch.
Have you ever seen The Cutting Edge?
I have not seen The Cutting Edge. What is The Cutting Edge?
The Cutting Edge is about a hockey player who gets hurt and learns how to be an ice dancer. And it goes to the Olympics and becomes an ice dancer. It's actually a really good movie.
What is Blades of... Is it Blades of Steel? Or is that the
Blades
video
of Glory.
Game?
Blades of Glory.
That's what I'm thinking. Yes, that movie's terrible, too. But funny, but terrible. Matt is in Costa Mesa. Matt, what's up?
Hey, bud.
Hey, man.
How are you?
Good. And yourself?
Good. What about Ice Cube as Craig in Friday against Devo at the end?
Oh, that is a great upset. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, he beat Devo. Great job.
Yeah.
Wow.
Big time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Stay healthy, stay safe. That is a pretty big upset, even if it's not sports related. Like that was a fight. You know?
Yeah.
Like, and he beat Devo. And nobody was messing with Devo.
What about A League of Their Own? When at the end, you're supposed to be, Dottie is supposed to win the whole thing, and then her sister.
She lets her sister win.
Well, did she let her sister win?
I mean, didn't
That's
she?
That's the thought. I don't know.
Didn't she?
I mean, they collided at home plate. She dropped the ball.
She did. I mean, do you believe Dottie didn't actually drop the ball on purpose?
I mean, it's up to interpretation. She was coming full bore at her.
I don't know. Benjamin is in Glendale. Benjamin, what do you got? Yeah.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
What's up?
Good. I'm going to segue real quick because you have the sports things. I got to go golf, hockey, baseball.
And so you say golf?
You got to go
golf. See,
golf number one.
And I have a reason. If you give someone a thing of clay, they can make something easily. You give them two sticks with that same clay, it's much harder. When you have something to hit, like a baseball, a puck, or a golf ball, it's just harder.
I mean, but you don't think that for a second, Benjamin, that getting punched in the face would be more difficult to deal with than playing golf?
Listen, I drop like a bag of rocks. I get it. But as far as hardness or difficulty, I got to go golf, hockey, baseball.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Stuff. And then my movie is Ducks, the Mighty Ducks.
Oh, Mighty Ducks is a good one. That is a good upset. Excellent call, Ben. I appreciate it. Benjamin there in Glendale. Darren is in the Valley. Now, do we know where in the Valley, the All Valley? Was it really Encino? Because I know he lived in Reseda, but I think the actual tournament for Daniel LaRusso was in Encino. But anyway, I'm sorry. Darren is in the Valley. Go ahead, Darren.
Hey, I just wanted to say my favorite movie for this topic would be The Replacement.
Oh, The Replacements is good. Yeah. That is a good one.
Quicksand.
Yeah, that is an excellent one. Excellent addition, Darren. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. 877-710-ESPN. Which is the hardest sport? Golf? No. Bergman, even you can't go golf one.
Golf is definitely top five. It's such a hard sport.
Top five?
What?
There is a degree of difficulty to it,
but you're not
getting
beat in the face, Bergman.
Not a degree. It doesn't matter. Not a degree. That is a very, very difficult sport. And to hit that teeny little white ball and to make it go straight consistently is almost impossible.
Eight,
you
seven,
have, You have super. You have pro golfers that shoot terrible numbers because of it. It's very hard.
Right, but you're just. It's a leisure thing. It's not even.
It's
like,
not leisure. It's very frustrating. It's a very frustrating.
Frustrating doesn't make it. Just that's not the only like physical. The physical nature or lack thereof of it, I think, also needs to factor into this equation on this list of the most difficult sports. 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. We've got more breaking news. We've got some breaking news on Major League Baseball as far as when this meeting will happen. We'll tell you about that on the other side. Plus, should college football players have a say on playing this season? We'll get to that. Clint Yates is going to join us at 1140. Sedano, 710-ESPN. Sedano with you on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Penzo Performance Line. If you missed earlier, Ryan McGee covers NASCAR for ESPN, joined us to talk about the horrendous situation that Bubba Wallace had to endure. A noose in his garage. He didn't see it. His team found it, and NASCAR is investigating. The FBI is involved. This is going to come to a head eventually. So thanks to him for joining us. He was unbelievable on the subject matter. And Bob Costas, who's always unbelievable, the guy's a legend, joined us earlier as well. If you missed any of it, subscribe to the podcast. And our buddy Clinton Yates will join us at 1140, so in about 8 minutes. So, real quick, there's a lot of talk today, and I saw this on First Take. So, Bergman, I'm sure you've seen all the different positive tests when it comes to college athletes, particularly football players. I saw Clemson had 23.
There LSU was close, 30.
Yeah, 30, right, at LSU. And now, look, I think that in certain states where things were rampant, right, I think you're going to have a worse scenario. I think in states that opened earlier than they should have, you're going to have these scenarios. I think that, look, you're going to have positive tests. I think all these leagues or sanctioning bodies or whatnot understand that that's the case, like you're going to have some, but that's an alarming number, I think. And you know how I feel about this. I have not felt great about colleges returning. You don't pay these players. One thing is pros, you know, being paid to play and taking an inherent risk. Another thing is college players. And look, I think that this stuff will probably get played. I wouldn't recommend that they play. But, man, a lot of these schools, they treat these kids like an experiment, like a science experiment, you know? And there are no direct protocols, like universal protocols in college sports. Some teams are testing. Some schools are testing. Some don't. Some conferences don't even have a universal approach to this. Like, that thing needs to get fixed quick because, you know, I understand that the demographics say that those kids are not in a lot of danger per se and that they should be able to overcome it, but you shouldn't treat them like a science experiment.
No, absolutely not. And I mean, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who's the quarterback for the UCLA football team, talked about this with I think 30 other players.
Yeah. Over the weekend.
Over the weekend. And they're saying, you know, the way that they're looking at it is, we understand that it's like a 0.1% that is happening but that means that could be one person. Are they going to want just to see one athlete be just to die to, for them to
right? Like the worst case scenario could be that, right? And all it takes is one, right?
Or all it takes,
or not even, it doesn't have to be a player, right? Like it could be a coach, right? Who catches it because of a player. You know what I'm saying? Like there's a lot of things here that are in play, you know, and I think that particularly with college players, man, I just don't think they should be used as science experiments. I think it's reckless is the best way to describe it.
Right. Now, let me ask you, sorry, real fast. Wait, let me ask you, though, is if one Power 5 team, like let's say Clemson and LSU both have stuff going on. Let's say LSU has to shut down and they're not going to play sports at all. They're not going to play college football. Does the rest of the Power 5 shut down with it, or do they just leave LSU out?
Man, I don't know, man. I don't know what you do there. Like, I don't have a great answer for you, to be honest with you. I don't know. And I think that the problem is is what I was alluding to. You don't have this universal approach or this universal figure, right? Like the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, all the MLS, right? Like WNBA, they all have commissioners. There's no commissioner here. The conferences do what they want. The schools do what they want. And this is when you need uniformity in some way, shape, or form, and you don't have it. 877-710-ESPN. So I would give the players an opportunity to voice how they feel in college and vocalize whether they want to play or not. I would give them that opportunity. That's just me. So whether it's the individual schools that maybe decide that, and I know that the players at UCLA have clearly don't trust Chip Kelly.
That's according to Dorian in his tweets. He says that it's not about Chip Kelly, and Chip Kelly is fully on board with all of their demands.
Well, okay. According to him, reports made it seem fairly clear that the collective doesn't trust him.
Right, but that was part of what the tweets were all about. And if I can,
No. I'm talking about the collective as the group, not Dorian.
He was a part of it. He is the only one. He was one of the only ones that was actually named in that collective of the group. The other ones didn't even want their names being said. So him as the quarterback and the starting quarterback put his name out there right away. And he is saying that it's not just about that. That it's not. It's that he even apologized right here. Would also like to state that Coach Kelly agrees with all of the demands on this letter and is working to get them in place. As the player whose face is on the cover of the article, I apologized to Coach as I was unaware the letter would be given to the media for them to mislead.
Okay. All right. If you say so.
I'm just going by his words.
Okay. All right. You know, all I'm saying is that when 30 players get together like that, it didn't. Now, I know he defended him, okay? But it doesn't seem like everyone there is on the same page. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll just leave it at that. Maybe we'll take Dorian Thompson-Robinson at his word there. And that maybe he's not just speaking out for himself specifically in that instance. So, anyway, let's get to the phones because people want to chime in on the silly discussions we've been having, awful 80s movies, the biggest upset in movie history. I was labeling Daniel LaRusso over Johnny Lawrence as, I think, the biggest upset. And we were also, you found this list of the hardest sports to play, the most difficult sports. And people are trying to claim, like, golf is on the list. It's top five. Boxing is number one. And I think boxing should be number one. Or MMA, honestly, should be number one. Just because you can get your face pounded in. Hockey is number two on the list. I'm not arguing with very many of these, but I do think that golf needs to be further down this list. Like enough with golf being that difficult. I get the skill set is hard, but the fact is you don't have any physicality to worry about, okay? Like it's not somebody tackling you in the middle of your swing.
Right. So let's put just hockey just for a second to try and convince you that hockey is the hardest sport. One of the biggest things in hockey is the fights. And you are fighting. You are literally going hand to hand.
Right. Yeah.
On
the
ice.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You don't have players helping you out.
Yes, you can.
Exact same. No. There's in a fight, it is you versus the other guy.
Yeah, but
you
there's
take
a
off your gloves.
Right. And then there's a referee that separates you after a minute. You're not fighting for 12 rounds, Greg. Imagine doing that for 12 rounds.
It doesn't matter. You're still doing all these things on ice. You're taking boxing and you're putting it on ice. It's a much harder sport. Hockey is the hardest sport, period.
The individuality
on ice.
The individuality of MMA and boxing, to me, make it more difficult. Anyway, let's go to Jason in Laguna. What's up, Jason?
Happy Monday, guys.
Hey, buddy.
Listen, I say baseball's still the hardest sport. It's the only sport that you fail to succeed. If you go 3-10 of your free throws, you're worse than Shaq. You're a quarterback and complete 3-10 of every passes, you're cut. In baseball, you complete 3-10 of every of your hits. You're in the Hall of Fame. It's the hardest sport mentally, but physically it's got to be hockey. And to top it off, the best comeback movie is Slapshot. Winning the Federal League, no question about it, it's Slapshot.
Slapshot's not a bad one. That actually isn't bad, Jason. Thank you for the call. Stay healthy, stay safe. Let me go to HB in Hermosa Beach. He dropped? Sorry, Chris is in Inglewood. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm going to see if I can squeeze in three quick things.
Go ahead.
First thing is, props to you for Jim Cotta. Besides my brothers, no one knows that movie. Great to hear it. Great to hear it. The second thing, awful 80s movie on the theme of sports, Christian Slater skating and gleaming the cube.
Yes.
And last one, for the upset in sports, I know this one isn't going to turn heads right away or blow your mind right away, but I challenge people to just look up my point, and you'll see what I mean. And it's the very first MLS championship. The LA Galaxy was up 2-0, and they lost in overtime 3-2 to the DC United. And my point is that it changed MLS history, I think. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, Chris. Thank you, buddy. Let me grab Scott in Santa Clarita real quick before we get to Clinton. What's up, Scott?
Hey, guys. I got two things for you today.
Okay.
Worst 80s movie, I have to go with No Retreat, No Surrender.
Oh, yes. No Retreat, No Surrender. Jean-Claude Van Damme is the bad guy in the movie. Yeah.
He is the bad guy, and he does not have a speaking role.
No, he doesn't say a word, but he does do a split between the two ring ropes in the corner.
Yes, and the best upset would have to be Texas State surviving the death penalty and necessary roughness with Kathy Ireland as the kick.
Scott, that is so good. I'm laughing. I literally clapped in my office here because I remember watching that movie at 13 years old or whatever it was in the theater with my friends, and we started doing the wave in the movie theater. We were like clapping. We were rooting for them so hard. We were such idiots. But you're right. That is a big one. A great movie. First of all, thank you for the call. Stay healthy, stay safe. Kathy Ireland was the kicker in the movie. We had Sinbad, I believe. Was he an offensive lineman? Yeah, I think he was an offensive lineman, maybe a defensive lineman. But he was fantastic. And Scott Bakula, yeah, that's a great point, was the quarterback who had time remaining on his he had time eligibility left in his college career, which was fantastic. It was a really good movie.
That was a fantastic movie. And yeah, at that time, I was in absolute love with Kathy Ireland.
Yeah. Oh, she was beautiful for sure. No question. Still is, I'm sure. All right. Clinton Yates. We'll talk baseball. We'll talk NASCAR and 80s movies with him in 2 minutes. 90 seconds, actually. Sedano Show with you here on 710 ESPN. Tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast with our friend Mina Kimes, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review the ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. Clint Yates, our pal of the undefeated. Check out his work there. Follow him on Twitter, on Around the Horn, giving us the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Clinton, thank you so much for joining us. I have a lot of breaking news in the movie world right now.
Okay.
We were just talking movies. I know you wanted to comment on our last caller who called in a second ago. But we have some sad news that Joel Schumacher has passed away with a long battle of cancer. Now, Joel Schumacher had some of the Brat Pack films, St. Elmo's Fire, The Lost Boys also, but also did some of those Batman movies that people weren't so thrilled about back in the day with the Val Kilmer and Clooney. But speaking of Batman, The Hollywood Reporter just reported, get this, Michael Keaton, who famously starred as the Caped Crusader in the 1990s Batman movies, is in talks to reprise the character for Warner Brothers. So like an old Batman.
I mean, Keaton was the best Bruce Wayne, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I like that movie the best. Prince did the soundtrack. Schumacher was on that movie as well. So there's a lot connected there. But, I mean, you're never going to break me away from Keaton being the best Bruce Wayne simply because I was at the age at the time. I mean, I used to watch that movie every day, straight up. You know
right.
what I'm saying? It was the original movie blockbuster summer hit. Prince's album, by the way, the soundtrack went
so good.
Diamond.
I bought it.
For those of you who don't know,
it was great.
Every song, it sold 10 million records. Come on.
Yeah. 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 It was incredible. Like, he did such a good job with that. Even the Batman theme that he created was fantastic.
Bangers. Yeah. Nothing but bangers on that soundtrack. Party Man? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I was on with Ireland the other week, and it turns out, he told me this, when you download Party Man on iTunes, the clip before where the dude says, "Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds, Jack Nicholson." It's on the actual track, which is
tremendous. No way.
So download that today and you will get it. It's fantastic.
I'm in. I just got chills thinking about that.
Exactly, right? I know. He told me and I hit the roof. It was so exciting.
Yeah. I've now had back-to-back chills as you have given me that. And then, of course, the caller earlier, Scott in Santa Clarita, you know, reminding me about Ed Gennaro's huge victory as the Texas State head coach in Necessary Roughness.
Here's the best part about that movie that you mentioned. What did Sinbad play defensive line? line or offensive line? Immaterial. The point is that in the movie, he was a daggone professor. Yeah, they pulled him out of the classroom and get on the field. That's the funniest concept I've ever heard of. It was so great and so ridiculous. I love
him and Bakula having eligibility is fantastic.
So he's out there teaching algebra, and he's got a daggone cardigan on. It was fun.
And of course, one of my favorite scenes is the, and if you haven't seen this movie, you really should just for the laughs. I still think it holds up from a laughs perspective.
Sure. I mean, it's a great microcosm of that time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and it's not wildly offensive. It's, you know, it's a little racy in terms of like the jokes about Polynesians and so forth, but they're trying to be on the right side of it. It's not going for the super edgy. So I don't think it's going to offend people at this day and age, but I haven't seen it in 10 years. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was a funny movie. And I did absolutely do the wave back then. So will you be doing the wave if we get a baseball season? Because now it's being reported that they're meeting. They're meeting now, starting at noon Pacific, allegedly till 2 o'clock Pacific. So we may have an answer today, it seems like.
I think we'll have an answer today. But like I've been saying the whole time, I just hope we get a product that people like seeing. The idea of taxi squads, the idea of guys who just don't want to be there, not being there, and therefore the competition going down, that bums me out because it's going to be kind of a weird year anyway, you know, and the regular season being so short with the playoffs being so long, I think it's easy to say that, oh yeah, baseball is going to come back and we're all going to be fine. But if it's a bunch of guys from AAA and a bunch of guys from, you know, the lower levels of the team, the various teams that people aren't really that interested in seeing and you can see the product on the field, I don't really know how great that's going to be, and that's fine, but like I'm really hoping that whatever they figure out gets the best talent back as much as I care about when that talent actually comes back to play, if that makes sense. If that's next year, okay. Yeah. But if it's this year and it ends up getting jacked up and you end up having a stop-start schedule, I don't know that that's worth it at this point.
Have you noticed that this thing is kind of flipped back on the players again, where it's kind of like, hey, I know we took forever, but here, you got to make a call soon because we only have a finite amount of time to make this happen. Like, it kind of sucks that it's been put on them again, but it does feel like that tide has turned again.
Maybe, but I also feel like people are going to understand that once other sports start coming back, how risky this actually is and was. Like, forget about the labor disagreement. You know what I'm saying? Because we've seen what's happened with the NBA. We've seen how these college football programs, which is a different matter, but in most people's minds, it's all sports. We've seen how some of these guys have been clearly indicated as the at-risk ones. I think that that's playing a very dangerous game with your own labor force to put things back in their hands, assuming you're just going to win that battle if the game comes back. If the game comes back and guys are all of a sudden falling off of active rosters because of actual baseball injuries and they can't come back because of COVID procedures, never mind actually anything having to do with the virus, dude, it's going to be on the owners yet again because they're going to say, first of all, why don't you have more people eligible to play because of the minors? And second of all, why don't you work this out to begin with so that we could have had enough games to get the actual players on the field? So they're playing with fire, man, and I don't think they're going to win. It's just going to end up being bad for the game, never mind the league.
Hey, did you catch what I said earlier about college athletes and college football? Like that they should be, I think they should have a right to vote on whether they should play or not. I mean, them being used as science experiments to me is just absurd and super reckless, man.
It's not even just that though, George. It's to me, it's like, yo, the people who run college football programs, for those of you who don't know how college football programs work, everybody who's assigned to something in a program is not some master of anything that they do. They're typically somebody that's been around the athletic department that knows something about the sport and how they get things operational on a game day, on a recruiting, and on a day-to-day basis. They are not equipped to be running outpatient centers for COVID-19 patients. That's not how that works. And so if you're just going to ask these particular administrators, whomever they may be, to all of a sudden take on this account, you're not just putting the players at risk. You're putting all these people involved at risk and stressing them out over things that could be avoided. And so when these coaches, they're like, oh, we're going to play, we're going to do this, that, I'm like, who's going to do that work? All you got to do is stand out there and call plays and yell at dudes. You don't got to be there for all this other stuff. So I'm with you, man. It's the experimentation they're doing with college kids who just don't even have a choice in the matter, never mind get paid. It's borderline shameful in some situations. So that UCLA scenario, I really hope they get that worked out, because if I'm that AD, I'm looking at them thinking, Might have to have a new coach, because if they don't trust him in this scenario, they're certainly never going to trust him when things really get real, and that's kind of tough to square.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he just jumped into the job, too. So
it's awkward, welcome. But it's real.
Yeah. Welcome. You're dealing with a pandemic, and the players aren't necessarily happy, and there may be an insurrection of some sort. Yeah, but welcome aboard. So Clinton Yates joining us here, our pal. Again, check out his work at The Undefeated. So NASCAR, I know you've done some reporting on this, but I want to get your kind of just your initial emotional reaction to everything that transpired last night.
So, you know, what's funny about that is that for those of us who were watching the race yesterday, there was more than just that in terms of what the noose in Bubba Watson's locker was about. You know, the day started with some guy flying a plane around Talladega
right.
with a big old Confederate flag on it that said defund NASCAR, which was annoying enough, obviously. And it also had 20, 25 trucks lined up outside the speedway with their flags on display as well. So, like, that had already happened, you know, and people were trying to locate who this plane was and where all this stuff came from. So there was already enough out there in terms of people's ears up for some sort of weird conspiracies type of scenario situation happening anyway. And then as soon as we get out of the ESPYs, where NASCAR made a great showing talking about everything they'd done, bang, news of a noose. And you're just kind of thinking, oh my God, like this is, you know, this is going to be a bigger haul than we thought. And I don't mean we as in, like, you know, NASCAR. I mean we as in, like, the people who want to get involved with the sport who are still going to find constant barriers like this. Because I said a week ago or so, like, sure, I'll go to a race now as a 20-year fan of the sport. I'm not going to Alabama. You know what I mean? But mm-hmm. I'll probably show up to a track or two. And people are jumping in my mentions like, oh, you're prejudging Alabama, this, that, and the third. It's like, nah, B. That's a real deal issue, case in point right now. And I'm not saying that just to dunk on somebody. I'm saying that because that's a personal safety thing. Forget about the fans. Obviously, the drivers are being threatened terroristically according to the law as well. So for me, it was just kind of like, yo, this creates a serious issue in terms of what logistically NASCAR has to figure out what they have to do. I'm not all that shook because some idiot stuck a piece of rope in somebody's locker. It just lays out how hard this is actually going to be for the league in practice, never mind mindset in terms of the Confederate flag being all over their events.
So you did some reporting on this. What have you done? Who have you spoken to?
Well, I mean, I'm talking to people around, you know, NASCAR a little bit, and I was on the call today with the president, you know, of NASCAR, and he basically just said, look, first of all, he's personally offended by the notion that it was an inside job, meaning they planted it or mm-hmm. staged it. Now, certainly right. it could have been somebody within NASCAR, but the idea that this was somehow staged, he just straight up said, I'm personally offended by that, and I can't even process why somebody thinks that would be an available thing to do, which makes sense. But the second thing he said was, whoever we find is going to be unequivocally banned by NASCAR for life. Now, I mean, look, I don't know about you, but like, if this could be anybody and the FBI is involved, like, who you ban for life is going to say something, you know? And if you find out that more than one or three or five people are involved, are you going to ban all of them? You know, and are you going to tell everybody who that is? I think there's a big question that NASCAR has to answer here in terms of, like, not only are how they're going to adjudicate this, but how they're going to identify perpetrators. I think I'd like to know who this person was, but I don't really necessarily know how productive that is for NASCAR, you know? So there's questions there on both sides that are difficult. I don't know if they planned on canceling this day's race or if they ever even thought about it. I didn't manage to get that question in, but like, there are people who think that they should. So there's a lot of different ways that folks feel that NASCAR should handle these things. And it's tough, too, because this has been a pretty good season of racing, George. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Beyond all this other nonsense. And that's what's annoying. NASCAR was doing a good job of getting their product out there and having their races get back because it shows well on TV. But this stuff shows too much, too. And it's just, it's going to be a long haul, man, because these racists are not going to let up until somebody hits them in the mouth. And I don't know that NASCAR's prepared to do that just yet.
Clint Yates, check out his work at The Undefeated. We'll catch up with you again later in the week like we normally do.
Yeehaw.
All right, man. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. There he is, Clinton Yates with us here. All right, we got to wrap up the show. Thanks to Clinton. Thanks to Bob Costas. Thanks to Greg and Laura. Thanks to Ryan McGee. You guys, we love you. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10. See ya.